Today's program was brought to you by Bonnie Plants, bonnieplants.com.
Hi, this is Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sharp and Hot. I am your host, Chef Emily Peterson, coming to you live from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn, for episode number 85. Yeah, we're coming around the bend on number 100, Jack.
That's incredible.
I'm very excited.
Time flies.
It feels like only yesterday I was here nervous and... What was I going to talk about? Now I'm like, yeah, put on that microphone.
You're not nervous anymore?
No. Is that bad?
No, it's good.
No, I'm really not. I used to, like, I drove here today for the first time in a while because my semester's over, so I had the luxury of sitting in my obnoxious mom vehicle. You know, as a suburban mother, I can drive a huge Honda Pilot over the George Washington Bridge with a New Jersey license plate and catching up on some podcasts. And I was like, I used to make this drive and, like, be sweating bullets that I didn't know what I was going to say or what I was going to talk about. Now I'm like, no, man, this is, like, my home. I feel great here.
It's your wheelhouse.
Yep, it's my wheelhouse. So Anne is out. She had to go see Mad Max, and this was the first opportunity that she had. So she's not going to be
really?
Joining us.
Really? That's the reason. Wow.
I told her I was going to come up with something better than she's really not feeling well. So, yes, Mad Max.
That's solid. I'll support that.
Did you see Mad Max this weekend?
No, but I heard it's, like, the best action movie of all time.
That's what I'm hearing. My husband went to see it. And loved it and said that I should go and I will love it too. And I gotta say, I'm not a huge action movie fan.
Nor am I, but I'm gonna give it a shot.
I'm gonna try it.
You were busy this weekend, huh?
I was gonna humble brag. I will openly brag that I completed the Brooklyn Half Marathon this weekend.
Whoa,
hello, you still there?
Yeah, okay. I'm here.
What happened?
I don't know.
The
news was so big, it broke my mic.
It broke the microphone. Yeah, and I got to tell you, leading up to this race, I did not think that I was going to be able to do it. And the listeners have been on this kind of running journey with me because I started running about a year and a half ago, which is within the time that I was doing this show. And it started out as something to do with my son so that he wouldn't keep trying to plug things in. And so I bought a running stroller and I put him in it and, like, just walk around the lake for a little bit. And then I was like, oh, I could run. And so I ran around the lake. And then there was a time where I thought running around the lake twice would be, that was, like, crazy. And that was 6 miles. And then my girlfriend convinced me to sign up for this half marathon. And so that was twice the distance of the longest run I'd ever done. And so, like, it was a real kind of study in the mental aspects of running, because I totally psyched myself out about this race, and, like, I didn't think I could do it, and I was really stressed out about it. And then about 3 days before the race, there was this sort of, like, inevitability that set in. And then on race morning, I felt awesome. And the first 8 miles, I was like, I can't believe I've already run 8 miles. And it helps that there's, like, hundreds of people that you're running past cheering, waving flags and having funny signs. And I was thinking, we should do this for each other just in life. Like, life would be so much easier if there were people on the sidelines be like, you are so awesome.
I thought that's what Facebook was for.
I guess so. Maybe I'm not using Facebook, right? I'm usually using it to stalk people I went to undergraduate school with. Not really. Well, kind of really. I wish I could say I was lying. So then I hit mile 9, and it suddenly everything was like, I did this mental calculation that in future races I'm not going to do, which is calculate how many more minutes I had to do that for. So the first 8 were awesome, and then I was like, I have to do this for another... See, I'm running 11 and a half minute pace times. So I have to do this for, like, almost another hour? Oh, my God. So running down Ocean Avenue, it's just a wide, straight, open road with no real visual things to look at. There's no bridges or cemeteries to go. There's nothing to look at. But I have to give a shout out, and this is kind of outside of who I am usually cheering for, but the NYPD was awesome. They had vans set up on, like, every third intersection filled with police, who I know that their primary reason for being there was to keep us safe. but they were like on their megaphones cheering the runners on, and they were so funny and like interesting, and they could just as easily have been standing there, you know, in riot gear, and they weren't. And I just felt like, what a great community spirit to even have the police officers who, in the absence of having to control anything, can enjoy the race as much as the runners did. So that was really wonderful. And then I got to the boardwalk, and there was the there's the finish line, and it was over.
Incredible.
And it's a huge relief to not have to think about it anymore.
Yeah. It rained too, yeah?
It rained, yeah. We got rained on in the park, which was actually kind of nice because it cooled everything off. And then it stopped, and it never got super hot. And I got wet, but I'd bought myself like a real performance-y tank top to wick away the moisture. And I'll tell you, it works. There's a reason that you pay extra money for that technology.
Nice.
So, yeah, and then I got home and registered for another half marathon. So it took a couple of days. It took a couple of days and a few Advil and sitting on my back porch with bags of frozen peas on my knees. But now I feel like I'm ready to do another one. So I'm going to do the Hamptons Marathon in the end of September.
Oh, really?
Yeah, a half marathon. That's fun. Yes, that's the other thing I learned about myself is that in mile 6, I was running with my friend Jen, and I was like, what marathon are we going to do? And now, I'm like, I don't want to do a marathon, ever. Like, I have taken that off of my list of aspirations. I think 13.1 miles is a really far distance. It's way farther than I run recreationally, which is like somewhere between 3 and 6 miles for fun. The idea that I would get to that finish line in Coney Island and then turn around and have to do that whole thing all over again, that it's just not for me. And maybe I will change my tune someday.
Never say never.
I don't know. I think I would rather do something like a sprint triathlon or one of those obstacle course things with some variety. But to do another 2.5 hours of just pounding the road, that sounds rough. Like actual torture.
Yeah.
How was your weekend, Jack?
Good. I'm prepping for the Bonnaroo performance. Me and my ragtag squad of DJs will be playing about 40 hours worth of programming over the course of the weekend at Bonnaroo. And Heritage Radio will also be there doing programming on the solar stage. So we have a pretty big presence there.
That's awesome. So Bonnaroo is something that I know is that I'm pretty sure Lindsay Lohan goes, right? And like dresses like
I don't
like
think
a...
she goes there. That sounds more like the Coachella crowd.
Oh, yeah.
Bonnaroo is like in the middle of Tennessee and some farm, you know, less the Lindsay Lohan vibe.
Okay. So what kind of musical act, anything that a fairly mainstream listener, like music listener like myself would know?
Well, let's see. Their headliners are, I believe, Mumford and Sons.
Oh, yeah, I know that.
Funny enough, Billy Joel.
Oh, man. Yeah. I'm such an unapologetic Billy Joel
there
lover.
There you go.
My husband, he has given me space in his record collection for some Billy Joel vinyl that I can seriously get down with.
Kendrick Lamar. I don't know if you know him, but he's playing Earth, Wind, and Fire. That's kind of cool.
That's cool. So is this something that people... I sound like such an old person. Is this something that the kids purchase tickets to and then you travel to?
Yes. So the total attendance is somewhere in the neighborhood of 80,000 people a day.
Wow.
And they all camp there. So there's like this... Everyone kind of just lives together for the weekend. Sort of like a Burning Man, but with... tons of amenities and like, you know, live music and sponsors and stuff.
That sounds like something I would have loved 10 years ago.
Exactly.
I would have had so much fun.
No, it is really fun though. Of all the music festivals, it's I think the loosest and most fun. People are really there just to have a good time and not necessarily to be seen or make any like fashion statement or anything. It's a blast.
Cool. Well, Jack, have so much fun.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I bought tickets to go. We're going to go see Willie Nelson in Prospect Park at the Bandshell.
Ooh, nice.
And my friend Katie was the producer on Soundcheck for a long time. And we're going to see Willie Nelson because my father, it was pretty much, I think it was the only thing that my father listened to. Or maybe that, and he had a Neil Young tape. And if he was driving, that's the only thing that we ever listened to. So I grew up not, like, hating Willie Nelson because it meant that I wasn't getting to listen to Pearl Jam. And so I emailed my friend Katie, and Soundcheck had done this thing where it was like a deep dive on different musical things, and it was like how to be smarter about X, Y, and Z. And so it was like how to be smarter about Frank Zappa and how to be smarter about classical music. So I emailed her. I was like, did you do a Willie Nelson one by chance? And they did. And so I listened to the How to Be Smarter About Willie Nelson. So I'm very excited to go to that.
So you're ready for that
show. I'm ready. And then we're going to go see Edward Sharp and the Magnetic Zeros. Oh,
that's fun.
Who I'm really excited to see. And I feel like it will be a lot of bearded crying men, which are like my favorite kind of man. So I'm excited.
If you're lucky, yeah.
My husband will be first in line.
Oh,
but
there you go.
So
I will say I also officially welcomed spring by making a pasta with ramps. So
oh, good.
I feel like it's really springtime. We made this awesome recipe from Quincible where we cooked kind of asparagus heads and sautéed them, and then we blended, pureed the bottom parts of the asparagus and the ramps, bulbs, and... it was really tasty.
Yum. Yeah. Our asparagus is serious in the garden. And if I miss a day, I put a picture up on Instagram. If I miss a day harvesting asparagus, like what comes out from the grocery store is about 12 inches long. It's like 3 feet tall. Like I put a picture of a pile of asparagus next to my crock to give you a sense of scale if you forget. In one day, they just like shoot up because they're in the fern family. And so you have to cut them below ground and that'll encourage them to continue sending up fresh shoots. We've been eating our body weight in asparagus, which is,
it's time, right?
Yeah, and that's like a really good problem to have.
Yeah, for sure.
And I worked out in the garden a lot this weekend. I mulched I have two different types of squash, and I have a whole bunch of shishito peppers that are doing really well, and some Asian greens, and I have not planted my bean seeds yet, so I got to get the beans in the ground. But it's like, my kids started preschool, and now I have so much more time during the day. So the part of the garden that I'm responsible for, because we have this little commune with my husband and his parents, I'm really proud of it this year. And it's because my kids, you know, blowing bubbles with somebody else at the preschool, not me. And we got him a brand new excavator toy, which has to be kept out of the garden because we realized that his favorite game is to excavate the tatsoi.
Yikes.
So, yeah, it's, you know... Being two, it's hard to understand what dirt is okay and what dirt is not. And what's edible and what's not edible is also has been challenging. He was eating a dandelion the other day. I was like, oh, we gotta get on the flashcards or something. What qualifies as food? Okay, so why don't we do this, Jack? Let's take a break. And then when we come back, we have with us the owners of Emily, the restaurant on Fulton Street in, is that Prospect Heights? Fort Greene?
Clinton Hill.
They are going to come on and talk about their restaurant and Pizza Loves Emily.
And the break song here is called Anxieties by The Landing. We'll be right back.
Could an app be the answer to a better garden? Absolutely. It's the new free app, Homegrown with Bonnie Plants. Note, track, and photograph your garden's progress. Personalize your weather and reminders. Get variety info, grow guides, hands-free dictation, and more. The Homegrown with Bonnie Plants app. The sharpest tool in your garden. Download it free on the App Store.
I have to get that Bonnie Plants app. I heard Aaron, our fearless leader, interviewing the head honcho at Bonnie Plants, and that app sounds like something that a home gardener, even one like myself who thinks that she knows everything, could definitely benefit from. Welcome back to Sharp and Hot, everyone. I am your host, Chef Emily Peterson, broadcasting to you live from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Joining me now in the studio are Matt and Emily, the owners of Pizza. Is the restaurant called Pizza Loves Emily or just Emily?
It's just Emily.
Which is your name.
It is.
Which is awesome. Did you guys thumb wrestle over whether or not it was going to be called Matt or Emily?
It was always Emily.
That's the right answer. So you've been open for a year and a half in Clinton Hill on Fulton Street, right next door to Olivino, which is where I worked in the wine store for a couple of years. Tell me about your journey and how did you come to open a restaurant?
Well, I think that opening a restaurant is something that's been a dream of ours for quite some time. We, strangely enough, when I reminisced about, you know, when I was writing the bio for our website, when we first opened, I realized that the first three meals we ate together were pizza. So it was sort of faded. And in the those early conversations back in college, we talked about how Matt knew that he wanted to be heading into the food world. And, you know, once you've been working in the food world in every capacity, line cook, pastry chef, administrative, you hit that ceiling where it's time to take a chance and work for yourself. And so the space sort of opened up in our lives, and I was in a transition point too, and we jumped at the chance to work together and fulfill the dream. So we're trying every day to keep it up.
Now, Matt, you did not meet at culinary school, right? You were in an undergraduate program for something else?
Yeah, I was an undergraduate for computer science, and Emily was creative writing. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yep. It was a long time ago.
I was Matt's RA in college. That's how we met.
Oh, that's so cute. I was an RA. I love, and I dated one of my residents, too. Now you guys are married. So that, to me, is the most fascinating part of the story, because my husband and I have fantasized about opening a restaurant together, and I think we might kill each other. Maybe just on some days. I think in the long run, it would be a good idea, but how are you surviving as business partners and lovers?
That's a really good question. We've been together, we're coming up on 14 years together, and this has by and large been the hardest, well, the first year of the restaurant, the first official year, I think was the hardest year of our relationship, just in terms of figuring out how to be healthy communicators. You know, from the restaurant world that it's a very terse world. So learning how to hear a chef say something in the kitchen tersely to me, not as his wife, but as someone who's working service on Saturday night at 9 o'clock, and distinguishing between husband and chef was a really huge turning point. And I think the same thing for you, just realizing when we're business partners and when we're husband and wife. So
it's tough sometimes when you go home and you're just lying in bed and you just keep talking about work over and over and over, because that's what's consumed your life right now. So
right.
That's also tough.
I had two guests on twice early on in the show, and we did kitchen therapy because one of the people who has gone on to be the deputy director of this very radio station, she's a very good friend of mine, Allison Hamlin, and her partner, Sam. Allison she's the boss of the kitchen, and Sam just wants her to be happy. And they were having these like epic battles. And so I was like, why don't you come on and we'll have some therapy and we'll talk through. So did you guys like have some moments where you're like, okay, let's set aside the business and talk about how we're going to talk to each other? Or was it more organic problem solving than that?
No, I think it was having some conversations about like, okay, like, we really love each other, we really love our work together, now how can we be constructive in hearing each other and being better listeners and knowing when to turn off work and turn on marriage or whatever. And you know, I'm not gonna lie, sometimes like we'll get into a little bickering at work, and the other person, I think we've been really good about being like, hey, like I'm speaking as a business partner right now, not as a spouse. And we've been really tuned into honoring that with each other. And you know, just like in any marriage, like you really need to turn towards each other rather than turn away. So
you guys are so healthy, I love this. So other than that, it was what you shared, you know, your first meals were pizza. What drew you to pizza as a concept to open your restaurant?
After cooking in New York for a long time, I was burned out of the line cook, sous chef kind of career, and I wanted to specialize on something a little more, specialized. Sorry, twice. So I really like pizza, and I never made it before, but I knew it was something I wanted to go into. Like, everybody loves pizza, and I really love it a lot. So a pizza place opened right across the street from where we were living, and I just went in there with no pizza experience, and they hired me and trained me. So
did you lie or tell the truth?
No, trust me, I didn't know how to make any pizza.
It was very
obvious, right? That when I walked in, there was no experience whatsoever. So,
but I think something immediately really turned on from there. And I remember Matt saying, like, you know, I got my hands on this dough, and this is really like, it was tunnel vision from there. This is what I want to be doing.
So last Thursday, I had the opportunity to interview someone who has written a book called Grain of Truth about the anti-gluten craze in this country. And listeners, I will point out that we're going to tack that interview onto the end of this podcast. And so you'll hear it as like a little bonus segment. But he was telling me about making your own sourdough bread. So I have just started my very first sourdough starter at home. It is day two and I already forgot to feed it. I just called my husband and I was like, I need you to feed the sourdough starter. So you guys are making everything in-house. You make your dough, you make your toppings.
Yep, we make our dough, mozzarella, ricotta, everything.
And you make all the cheeses also. Yep. Wow. So I heard, and you can tell me if this is a myth or not, that if you wanted to make money in the restaurant industry to open pizza, pasta, or a bakery, that the overhead for the ingredients and your skew of how good you can make those ingredients means that you can be much more profitable than if you were to open like a steakhouse where protein is your main source of.
Yeah, definitely. There's a better markup on pizza or any kind of baked goods. You do have a higher payroll because your skilled labor is higher. So pizza makers are a little more expensive than like a grill cook would be, but in the end, it does work out. You do make you do a better profit margin on pizza.
And do you have a relationship with the Grand Army Plaza Farmers Market?
I go there occasionally.
Yeah,
pick stuff up.
I love it there. And so I will tell you that after the marathon, did I mention I ran a marathon this weekend? I'm really proud of myself. After the marathon, we walked up to Pizza Loved Emily to have what everyone is talking about, which is your cheeseburger. But alas, you are not open on Saturdays. So we stood outside, crestfallen, and went someplace else.
Oh, for brunch?
For brunch. Well, yeah. We didn't realize. I live far away. But Jen was like, I don't know why I didn't even think to look. So tell me about your cheeseburger, because this is what I have heard, that the pizza's excellent, but the cheeseburger is serious.
Yeah, the burger just was something I put on the menu because I don't really get out a lot to get other food. So I wanted to put a cheeseburger on, so when I wanted a burger, I could eat one. That's really what it came down to. And it just by luck, it's taken off really well.
So what's tell me about it.
I think it's more than luck. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No.
I think it's just that something that, I can brag about my husband, but I think that he really does put so much care and love into the food that he makes, which is why people come back and really like eating at our restaurant. And he made a burger that he wants to, that he can 100% stand behind because he wants to eat it. And it's made like with absolute precision and care to make it as good as it possibly can be. So there's definitely luck, but there's definitely a lot of hard work you put into it that you shouldn't overlook.
Thank you.
Aw, she loves you so much. So tell me, is it 100% beef? Which cut of beef are we talking? Are you grinding it in-house? What's the method here?
It's a dry-age blend from DeBrega and Spittler. They're an old butcher in New York. It's a 7-ounce patty, and it's on Tomcat pretzel bun, which I love pretzels, so I figured kind of a burger.
Tomcat is, they're the best, man. They have the best baguettes.
Yeah, they do great baguettes, and their pretzels are amazing also. So
garnishes?
Grafton cheddar, some caramelized onions, and the secret Emmy sauce.
Oh, so. What's the secret Emmy sauce? Other than that, you probably can't tell me.
it's a gochujang-based aioli.
Okay.
So
nice.
Yeah.
It's also slathered on our wings, our chicken wings.
So pizza, chicken wings, burgers. Do you have tap beer?
We do. We have wine and beer on tap. We have an array of beautiful seasonal salads from Meyer's Produce, and then our pizzas.
I'm seriously thinking about if there's an apartment available in the neighborhood, because this is the kind of restaurant that I will live at. I follow Food Network on Twitter, and there I was waiting to get my hair cut this weekend, and they asked, there was like this, which Food Network chef is your spirit animal? Like a quiz, and they use spirit animal, that was not my words. And I was like, I want to know. So I answered the questions, and I got Guy Fieri.
Oh, no.
And it was like, I think because I like beer and burgers and wings. And I was like, oh, no.
Who doesn't like beer, burgers, and wings?
Having that smug face look back at me and be like, you're Guy. I'm like, no, I want it to be Ina. But yes, I could live at a place that had burgers and wings and tap beer. That sounds like the restaurant that I would open.
Yeah, well, I mean, with the pizza, we're going on a year and a half, and it's safe to say I've eaten pizza pretty much every single day for the last year and a half, and I'm not the least bit sick of it, which is kind of horrifying.
So what, do you know where you go from here? Like, do you feel like this is what we're going to do? Or are you like, are you looking at other spaces or publishing a cookbook? Like, I don't know what it means. Like, once you have your restaurant up and running, is that enough, or do you want more?
I mean, I'm not sure what it means to grow either. We're very realistic about, you know, this kind of world being a day-by-day thing. Who knows what tomorrow brings? But I think for us, we want to find some balance in our lives so that we can have a little bit more human time outside of the restaurant. That's something that's of primary importance to both of us and our families, too. And we do want to grow. But again, I don't know what that looks like. We don't want to rush into anything. And we want to make sure that Emily is super functional and operational and maintains its integrity in terms of the food service and the service at the front of the house before we grow. But there is growth on the horizon. We just aren't totally zoomed in yet, I suppose.
And speaking of balance outside of work, you are a yoga instructor?
I am.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you have a mental, you know, a general sense of balance in your life that I think would benefit all of the restaurant industry if everyone took some time to practice yoga.
We try very hard to create a mindful place for people to work. That's a place that's not like the typical restaurant industry that can be a little bit hard to work in sometimes. So we try to make it a good place for people. My staff can always come and take yoga with me. And yeah, just try to keep it in perspective. When it comes down to it, it's just dinner.
Yeah. That's so true. I joke with my, when I have, you know, in the weeds, it's like, look, we are not separating conjoined twins here. Like, we're just feeding people. They'll be fine if their cold pea soup comes out in 5 minutes instead of in 30 seconds. They'll be fine. So I'll ask you, as a fellow yoga practitioner, I am having a very hard time establishing a home practice. And I think it's because I rely, and this probably could go back to like why I love the restaurant industry. I rely on the structure that someone else provides for me, that I don't have to think about what my next posture is going to be because someone else is going to tell me. And there's so much of my life where I'm the person telling people what to do that I like having a teacher, but I can't get there every day. Any tips?
I mean, I just think being in your body and letting yourself organically move is something that I've been working on at home. I just finished this 5-week women's group where we did a lot of movement experientials that were just based on your instincts. And so having a bit more of a free form home practice would be something that I would encourage, to just see where your body goes with some music on or in a quiet room or something like that. I too struggle with the home practice. I like being in class with an instructor and learning from my mentors and people who have something to offer me. But, you know, even if you just like do a down dog to like stretch out your low back or something, that's practicing at home, even if it's just one pose.
My kid does it. It's so cute. Like, cause I'll put the yoga mat down and then he'll get underneath me. So I'll do a down dog and then he'll like under, oh. It's very, very sweet. Matt, do you practice yoga?
Not as frequently as I probably should. Before the restaurant opened, I was doing it a little bit more, but now it's completely out the door.
Well, I am very excited to come back to Clinton Hill, right? We lived on Vanderbilt and Bergen. That was like Prospect Heights. So mm-hmm. Is it Fulton Street is the like, or Atlantic Avenue is the dividing line between
Atlantic.
The two?
Atlantic.
I'm very excited to come back, and I'm going to eat your food and drink your beer and have fun. And it sounds like a really warm, awesome space to be in. So congratulations on your success. And thank you for coming on Heritage Radio Network.
Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity.
How do people find out more about you?
Go on the website, pizzalovesemily.com.
Matt also curates our Instagram, Pizza Loves Emily, which has lots of good food porn.
Awesome. Food porn. I'll tell you, my Instagram feed is almost 100%. It's like people's kids and food. This is awesome. Thank you so much again. And listeners, as I said, the story that I did about gluten and Grain of Truth is going to be tacked on to the end of this. I like that phrase, Easter egg. I'm going to use that. It's going to be like a little Easter egg on the, although I guess if I tell people, then it's not technically an Easter egg, right? tacked on the end of this episode. And if you are listening live, you can go to heritageradionetwork.org. It's featured on the front page. It was a really, really fun conversation that we had. And we give you permission to eat all of the gluten that you want, so long as you get it from good whole sources. Until next week, everybody, let's see. Oh, and I should tell you that coming up next week, we have Olivia Rathbone. She's going to be on. She is the chef and kitchen manager at the Occidental Arts and Ecology Center. They grow a whole lot of their own food. We're going to talk about gardens and all that wonderful hippie stuff, and I'm really looking forward to it. So until next week, I hope that Anne enjoyed Mad Max and that the line wasn't too long. And everyone, keep playing with fire and knives. Stephen Yaffa is a novelist, a playwright, and an award-winning screenwriter. His writing has appeared in numerous online and print publications, including Salon, Playboy, Details, Rolling Stone, The Rotarian, and San Francisco Chronicle. In his new book, Grain of Truth, The Real Case for and Against Wheat and Gluten, Yaffa amiably merges science, history, biology, economics, and the always contentious world of nutritional fact and myth. Grain of Truth does not set out just to bash wheat bashers, but to offer us a viable alternative to going gluten-free. Stephen Yaffa, welcome to Heritage Radio Network.
Thank you. I hope to be able to answer some of your questions about gluten and bread and other things you might ask me about.
I'm so excited because I will tell anyone who will listen that gluten-sensitive is not really a thing. And as a result, I have alienated more than one friend in that process. So I'm thrilled to have you here to sort of help me defend gluten and demystify some of the conceptions and what of this new diet fad. So let's start with, can you lay out what is it about gluten that is so controversial?
Okay, let me first explain what gluten is, although some of your listeners, of course, will already know. But it turns out a lot of people may have misconceptions based on experiences that I've had talking to people over 2 years. Just to be very quick about it, gluten is a complex of two proteins, gliadin and glutenin, in wheat, rye, and barley. And wheat, rye, barley, and rye is what I'm trying to say. And basically what it does is allow for the elastic and extensible nature of wheat, which enables dough to rise in the oven and trap gas, which creates the air bubbles. A lot of people have problems with this or think they may have problems with this because the gluten molecules themselves are large molecules that are difficult for some people to digest without incident.
What is the percentage of people for whom that is a medically diagnosable thing versus the percentage of people who just say they just have breadhead, they just can't digest it?
The difference is really substantial between the two. I should say there's celiac disease, which people probably at this point may know about. That's 0.9% of all of us. That's absolutely diagnosable through biomarkers. It's often hereditary. If you have celiac disease, I don't need to tell you, you can't eat anything with wheat in it. The other and the greater majority of people who think they're gluten sensitive comes out at about 35% of us who think they may be sensitive to gluten. But in fact, based on clinical studies, really well-done studies by Dr. Alessio Fasano and other the best celiac doctors in this country, that turns out to be much closer to 6%, between actually 0.5% and 6%, depending on a variety of different factors that have to do with these trials. But at the very most, 6% of us seem to have some reaction to gluten. And I use the word seem to have because there are no medical tests that are really confirmed at this point in terms of being accurate.
So one of the things that I say and I get some pushback on is that I'll form it as a question. Am I wrong to believe that in that 35% of people who think that they are gluten sensitive, that this idea of a deprivation diet that isn't medically necessary or required by somebody's religion are almost always taken on by someone who is in a position of privilege to do so?
That's an interesting question. I'm not sure I can answer that, but I think that it is to some degree elitist, if that's what you're asking. And it sounds like you might be.
Well, my feeling is when I talk to people or I hear anecdotes, it seems like the loudest group of people are the ones who have the least to worry about in their life. And so they're kind of, it seems from an outsider's perspective, almost generating problems to worry about because everything is really going really well. And I think the human mind can't handle that.
You know, I that's a long conversation, Emily, and a really fascinating one. I'm not sure we'll solve it here, but I would definitely agree with the substance of that. And by the way, while we're on this subject, it also touches into the quasi-religious area as well, in that, you know, we're talking really about belief that may be coming from an emotional point of view as opposed to one that is substantial in terms of the medical, soundness of it.
So
you're dealing with, yeah.
I could talk about this at length.
we're really looking at some things crossover, and I think that, you know, when you've got a lot of time to be able to ruminate on what's wrong with you, you're in a different position from someone who gets up at 5 in the morning, gets to work at 6, and doesn't get home until 7 or 8 at night.
Right. So This American Life just did an episode about how difficult it is to change someone's mind, particularly on these kind of dogmatic issues. And in that story, it was about changing people's minds on whether or not there should be marriage equality in this country. But I'm wondering what kind of reaction has Grain of Truth received, because it's sort of, you know, pointing out sort of very similar dogmatic issues.
I think if you asked me that question in a month or so, I'd have a better handle on it, only because the book just came out 2 days ago.
Oh, okay.
even from that, you know, having gone around for 2 years and really, you know, doing a lot of research on it and presenting my point of view, when I finally, you know, got one together, there will be a lot of resistance to that. You know, people own their gluten sensitivity, and they're very, you know, unwilling to shake that belief often, even though it may not really be substantiated by any kind of, bioscience. So I suspect I'm going to get a lot of flack, and I look forward to it, because there's a whole story about processing wheat correctly that is not told in Wheat Belly. It's not told in Grain Brain, and it really should be. So, the more the better, frankly.
So for the people who are willing to change their mind, or people like me who never gave up gluten in the first place, you provide alternatives to the sort of brominated, hyper processed wheat that comes in the form of Thomas's English muffin, which broke my heart a little to see called out by name in your book.
Well, you know, it's actually, you know, the one good thing that everybody says about wheat, including those books, which I really take issue with, is that any kind of refined white flour is doing your system no good whatsoever. It's shooting, you know, sugar into your bloodstream. I think everybody knows this by now. And, you know, it's really not creating anything that's nutritious. But that's not wheat. That's just one way of processing wheat, short fermented wheat, as we call it, you know, they call it in the cereal and baking industry. It goes through the whole process in 4 hours from beginning to end. Well, guess what? Nature didn't intend it to go through 4 hours. It intended to go through a couple of days. That's why sourdough that has lactic acid in it, which is extremely beneficial for you, and the real natural sourdough processing itself takes at least 2 days from start to finish. And you can't hurry love, and you really can hurry wheat fermentation or any other kind of fermentation, and that's where the problems come from.
You paint a really very lucid picture of standing on the floor of an industrial wheat processing facility where they're bragging about turning out, not bragging, but, you know, was saying with pride, turning out some crazy number, like 700 rolls a minute.
Right.
And that's just like mind boggling I'm fascinated by how many people there are in this country to feed. And that number really helps you understand.
And it also helps you understand when you realize that they call the rolls that McDonald's serves hamburgers in carriers, because a carrier is really meant to do nothing but carry the food from your plate to your mouth without having it drip all over your lap. So this is food that is, you know, intended to be utilitarian. It's not really meant to be nutritious necessarily. And there's a big difference between the two, you know, and I think that ingenuity, which is extraordinary in industrial baking, needs to be turned also to things that are really nutritious for you, like sourdough bread. And I'm starting a campaign called Sourdough for All, because I don't think it really should reflect our where we stand on the economic scale. I think everybody should be able to afford really good bread that is, you know, long fermented. It may cost a dollar or so more, but it shouldn't be the difference between $2 a loaf and $6 a loaf.
So I instituted a rule in our family where we don't buy four-legged meat from four-legged animals if it's fluorescently lit. So basically that means I get my beef and my pork from the farmer's market. Would you say that buying your bread in that same rule would make it more accessible to a real sourdough bread?
Absolutely. Local artists and bakers, and there are a lot of them flourishing now around the country. Farmers markets is a perfect place to go find that bread and have conversations with them. You'll find that some of their customers who think that they're really sensitive to gluten can actually eat their sourdough bread without issue. And one of the reasons is that the lactic acid processing breaks down these bulky gluten molecules. It reduces the toxicity, the parts per million, in one test, for example, in Italy, from 75,000 parts per million to 12 parts per million. We're not talking about, you know, a small change here. This is huge.
Right.
So, you know, I'd say check it out. Give your system a break and eat things that are healthy for it.
So I usually ask authors if there is a recipe in their book to provide a recipe. And your recipe for whole grain sourdough bread is 7 pages long. And I'm wondering if for the average home cook, did they perceive, is there some perception that it's somehow easier to give up gluten than it is to embark on this, like, this other lifestyle change that would involve spending a dollar more per loaf of bread or the alternative, which is making your own?
Well, I think, you know, I happen to have the time to be able to do this because I'm a writer and I go downstairs and I stir up my sourdough starter and stuff. You know, if I were working in a different schedule, I probably wouldn't be doing what I really love to do, which is to make my sourdough bread at home. There's sourdough bread in Whole Foods that's made by local artisan bakers, which is a pretty good substitute for sure. There is really no ability to spend only a dollar more and get a commercial package in a plastic bag of real sourdough. If it says sourdough on it, it's almost certainly been sprayed with an acid at the end of it, the baking process that, you know, that creates that illusion. But
wait, I have to stop you there. Say that part again. That's fascinating. If it's like a regular commercial bag of bread, like, you know, from Arnold or whatever, and it says sourdough, that's merely a marketing term.
It is merely a marketing term. It's technic. It's acid that's been added to the bread without long fermentation. And you can't hurry love, and you can't hurry fermentation without creating all sorts of issues. So just be aware of that. You know,
so it's just like that tang on your tongue is just a sprayed-on additive at the very end to make you think, yep, tastes like sourdough.
Exactly.
Wow, that's a revelation. Although I'm not surprised at all. So my husband, I will confess on air, my listeners know I'm very pragmatic. We eat a lot of Martin's potato bread in our house. And my husband, who when he has the time, like you, loves to bake bread and will ferment it for days on the counter. You know, we work, I'm out of the house, I got a toddler, and I can slap some cream cheese on it. So my husband went to the store and bought whole wheat potato roll or whole wheat potato bread from Martin's. And I said that he fell into that same marketing trap, that just saying whole wheat does not make it a whole grain bread. I feel like I know what I'm buying, which is basically dessert bread, you know, sugar, meaningless sugar bread.
Sure.
But he fell into that marketing trap.
Well, you know, the FDA is not a big help here because the FDA allows a stamp to go on bread even if it's only 51% whole wheat and the bread can be called whole wheat. The rest of the bread, who knows what's in it, you know? It's not going to kill you, but on the other hand, you're not getting what you think you're paying for often. Only if it says 100% whole wheat is it going to actually have all of the bran and the germ intact. So, you know, you got to be careful as a consumer because you can easily get crossed up by labeling that I don't think is as clear as it needs to be.
Right. I think at no point should anyone trust a multinational corporation to make their nutrition decisions for them. So that said, I am now done teaching for the summer. So I looked at my calendar and I have a lot of free time. So can you walk me through? I'm going to start just like my listeners from scratch. I've never made a sourdough starter. I have your book, so I have the recipe. But walk me through what to expect.
Yes, I can walk you through it. And I'll tell you that the actual time that you have to put into this turns out to be only about a half hour. It's spread over a couple of days, so it looks more exhausting than it is. It's actually not really tricky at all. You can either buy a starter from a company like King Arthur, whom I highly recommend, if that flour is in your area. I would use organic, definitely use organic flours that are easy to find and not really that much more expensive at all. The whole process of making bread is pretty cheap. And basically what you're doing is once you've got this starter bubbling, And there are plenty of YouTubes on this as well. I don't want to go into that because it would take too much of your time. But once you've got the starter bubbling, which will take you about a week, it starts to percolate. It's really flour and water, and that's about it. But you really want to follow a recipe initially for that. Once you do that, you create what's called a leaven, or some people call it a mother, and there are various names. It's simply adding more flour to about a cup of the starter, letting it sit for about 16 hours, which is the beginning of the long fermentation. At that point, you've created something that you then mix with a combination of whatever kind of flour that you want to use. I tend to use whole wheat with a little bit of rye in it and so forth. And you put all that together. You really mix it up. Ideally, you get to mix it up by hand, so you get to feel when you've got enough of texture. And you learn this along the way after you do it a few times. But you can certainly use a KitchenAid mixer as well. And from that point on, you let it sit for a while because all these things, enzymes, have to be able to get to work. Then you shape it by hand. Then you proof it, which is turning it around, sticking it in a basket, letting it sit for a longer period of time. And you bake it. And the good news is, after all of that, you get to eat it. So, you know, that's where it's at.
So I'm going to take this project on. Is there a hashtag that listeners should use? I use the hashtag Sharp and Hot, where people can share their cooking and what they've made with me. Is there a bread hashtag that you want to start?
Why don't we start hashtag grain of truth?
Hashtag grain of truth. All right. So we'll do hashtag sharp and hot, hashtag grain of truth. I will be one of the posters and I will show you what I have made.
All right. Now you got to have an agreement with me that as you go along and get through this whole process, you keep me in touch. So let me know how you're doing.
I will absolutely do that. What's the best way for people to be in touch with you?
They have a couple of choices. One is I have a website, which is grainoftruthbook.com. I've got a Facebook page with the same name. They can use that. And or failing all of that, they can just email me at my website, www.stephenyaffa.com, or go to my website and email me from there.
Stephen Yaffa, thank you so much for your work. I am very excited to take on this project. The book is Grain of Truth, The Real Case For and Against Wheat Gluten. It's an excellent read. You're a wonderful storyteller, and I hope everyone goes out and gives themselves permission to go back to eating grain. Thank you so much for being on Heritage Radio Network.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.